no matter what.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to see you. Nice to have you with us. Nice to be here on what I discovered this morning is the 189th day of the year. Yeah, the Bible reading plan that I have goes through the every daily reading, and this morning it popped up and said day 189 of 365. 189th day of the year. Hey, David, or Keith or Andrew or whichever one's going to do it. Would you guys go back to the picture from the ramp building yesterday? Check out this picture. That's a motley looking group of kids, don't you think? So yesterday morning, they're supposed to start at 9 o'clock. And if you were awake and aware, at 9 o'clock tomorrow, it was thunder, lightning, rain, wind, all of that. So it kept getting pushed further and further and further. So I missed the work part of it. Well, because of a funeral. I guarantee I'd have rather been with these guys. But anyway, I missed the work part of it. I got to go to the pool party part, so that was fun. But anyway, this group of kids, they worked hard. They worked well together. They knocked out this ramp for this family through an organization called SAWS, Servants at Work. And they go through the county, and they build ramps for people in these types of situations. And so took them about 3 hours to build. So I wanted to show the picture again to credit them and honor them for their work, but also for Bonnie and Ben, who organized it and helped put it together, for those that the other adults that showed up to help, but also to everyone who contributed money towards making it happen, and to help offset the cost that would come out of the youth. If you want to, if you haven't done that but want to, you can certainly do that. You can just designate the work project on a check or an envelope or online. You can just put a memo in that you want to do that. So thank you for everybody who's contributed to that process. Thanks. I just said I didn't do anything. No, very, very, very well done on all accounts. So, if my kids have been listening as they've grown up, if one of the things that I hope they would tell you that they've heard repeatedly throughout their formative years is that you can never go wrong doing the right thing. It's never wrong. It's never the wrong thing to do the right thing. If they cannot tell you that, then they've not been listening. Or you'll just have to take my word for it that they've been told that. Or apparently I have more conversations with myself than I realize I have, because I intend to have them with someone else. So no, we've told them repeatedly that you can never go wrong doing the right thing. It's never a wrong time to do the right thing. And I mean, they have opportunities all over the place to choose to do the right thing or the wrong thing. Like, I can't tell you the number of times in their academic careers where they've had a homework assignment or a test or something where they could take a shortcut or do the wrong thing, an assignment that's challenging, where it would be really, really easy for them to just go to the internet, look up the answer, put in the answer, get 100%, and be on their way. I mean, after all, that's what all the other kids in the class are doing. Hey, David, what's the thing called? The AI thing that they use? What? ChatGPT. How many of you have heard of ChatGPT? Yeah, everybody under the age of 107. So, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. ChatGPT is a thing where you can go out and, I mean, it does the homework for you, basically. And it's this AI thing, and so kids are using it left and right to do all the work for them. Now, we've told our kids repeatedly, yeah, you can do that. and get the higher grade, but it will serve you better if you do the work. And we've told them, even if you do the work and get a lower grade than the person who cheated and got the higher grade, we're okay with that. Because you did the right thing. There's never a wrong time to do the right thing. So, and we've told them, sometimes when you do the right thing, things are going to work out really, really well for you. But sometimes when you do the right thing, things aren't going to work out as well as you think they should because you did the right thing. Sometimes when we do the right thing, things work out. Sometimes when we do the right thing, things don't work out. You and I have probably all lived enough life and seen enough life to know that you can do all the right things and things still don't work out. You can do all the right things and things get worse, right? You can do all the right things and be made fun of for doing the right thing. You can do all the right, but then there are these other times. There's these times where you do the right thing and everything works out. It's just this golden experience, right? So how do you decide whether to do the right thing? How do you decide whether to cut the corner? How do you decide whether to cheat on the assignment? How do you decide to do that? Because you don't know. You don't know if you decide to cut the corner or do the wrong thing, whether it's going to work out well or not. You don't know. So how do you decide? There's a story about a guy in the Bible, a guy by the name of Daniel, who faced decision after decision of whether he would do the right thing or cut a corner, whether he would stay true to the convictions of his beliefs or what. But the defining piece for Daniel in what he decided to do was his faith. What he decided, that was the foundation of his decision-making process. What he believed about God, what he believed about life, whether things worked out like he thought, or whether things went really well, whether things didn't work out, or whether things were really challenging, he didn't base his decision on those things. He based his decision on what he believed. And that was the foundation of his decision-making. He made the decision about whether he would do the right thing, whether based on what he believed about God. So several thousand years ago, the nation of Israel was conquered by King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar took the nation of Israel captive and held them in captive for over 70 years. During this time, the King Nebi, that's what I just referred to him, King Nebi decided that he wanted to bring the best and the brightest of the nation of Israel, of the Jewish young men, to work in the royal service of his palace. And so he issues an order and tells people, select only strong, healthy, and good-looking young men. I'm out. Make sure they are well-versed in every branch of learning and gifted with knowledge and good judgment. I'm out again. And are suited to serve in the royal palace. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Then train these young men in the language and literature of Babylon. The king assigned them a daily ration of food and wine from his own kitchens. They were to be trained for 3 years, and then they would enter the royal service. Daniel was one of the Jewish young men who was selected to be brought into royal service. So he was brought into the training, and he was brought into the learning, and he excelled at everything that he did. But one of the challenges for Daniel was this idea of eating food from the king's own table. Now, the phrase there, from the king's own table, kind of indicates it's food that the king would serve to his friends. So in other words, it's show-off food. He would bring the best food that he could get, and he would show off the food that he could provide to his friends. And that's what he's given. These young men had their choice of all the best food that they could basically eat anything they wanted from the king's kitchen. And this posed a challenge for Daniel, because some of the food that would have come from the king's kitchen would not have fit with the kosher diet that he followed as a Jewish young person. It would have gone contradictory to what he believed about food and his relationship with God. So he had to choose, do I eat from the king's own table, or do I follow my belief convictions and adhere to my diet? And again, in this culture, no one defied the king. The other thing is that that foods brought from the king's own kitchen, some of it would have been provided from temples. Temples that didn't necessarily align with the God that Daniel served and Daniel believed in. And so it would have been food that would have been offered to idols and therefore would not have fit within the belief system that Daniel made or Daniel believed in and held to. And so Daniel has a decision to make. He needs to decide whether he's going to eat from the king's own table or he's going to adhere to his belief system. And it says, but Daniel was determined not to defile himself by eating the food and wine given to them by the king. He asked the chief of staff for permission not to eat these unacceptable foods. So Daniel made a decision. He was determined. He made a conviction and he was going to stand his ground. And he wasn't going to allow himself to be defiled by eating the food given to him by the king. And so he goes to the chief of staff and he says, can we please have permission not to eat this food? Now, the interesting thing is the chief of staff now faces his own decision. Because if he defies the king and gives them permission, he could potentially put his own life at risk. And so the decision that this chief of staff should make is he should force Daniel to eat the food given by the king, because that's what the king, no one defies the king. And so the chief of staff would make them eat it. And so Daniel, knowing this, and it would be fascinating to me to know the conversation that took place after Daniel went and asked for permission. We're not given it, but what we are given is that Daniel then issues a little bit of a challenge. You know, it's almost like Daniel makes this a little bit of a competition. And he tells the chief of staff, he says, please test us for 10 days on a diet of vegetables and water. At the end of the 10 days, see how we look compared to the other young men who are eating the king's food. Then make your decision in light of what you see. So Daniel basically issues this challenge. And when he says, test us, it's plural. And then he says, then see how we look, it's plural. What he's referring to is some other young Jewish men who were chosen along with Daniel to go in. Their names are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, we'll reference them by other names, but they were names given to them by Babylonian versus the Jewish and all that. So anyway, he says, go to them and let us eat our diet. Let us do our thing and then compare. At the end of the 10 days, the four of them look much, much better than the others. And so the chief of staff communicates to the king that the guys who didn't eat from your table look better than the ones who do. What should we do about this? And it says the king talked with them. So he brings the four of them in. The king talked with them, and no one impressed him as much as Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. That's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego by the Babylonian names. So they entered the royal service. When the king consulted them in any matter requiring wisdom and balanced judgment, he found them 10 times more capable than any of the magicians and enchanters in his entire kingdom. So the king brings them in. He's impressed with them, and he says, okay, give me more information about this food. Obviously, you guys know a thing or two about food. So when it comes to matters of food, I want your opinion. Now, notice that the text doesn't limit what the king seeks his counsel, their counsel on, to just food. It says he consulted them in any matter, whatever matter he consulted them in. And I have to think that the king probably consulted them in a lot of matters. Here's why. I mean, if he's a smart king, if I were king, and I found someone or a group of people who were 10 times more capable than everybody else in providing sound judgment and wisdom, guess who I'm talking to? I'm talking to the people who provide 10 times, prove 10 times more capable. And so the king proves 10 times more capable. Or the four of them prove 10 times more capable than all the other enchanters and all the other magicians in the entire kingdom. And so he leans into them. And around this time, King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. And no one can interpret the dream except Daniel. And Daniel is able to interpret the dream. And when Daniel interprets the dream, the king begins to elevate him in his roles within the kingdom. Around this time, Nebuchadnezzar makes just an incredible decision. He decides that he's going to have a gold statue built. It's going to be 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide, and it is going to be the image of Nebuchadnezzar, just in case the people forget what he looks like. Actually, according to the biblical narrative, his ego has more in mind than just making sure the people know what he looks like. Here's what it says. It says, "Then a herald shouted out, 'People of all races and nations and languages, listen to the king's command. When you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and other musical instruments, bow to the ground and worship King Nebuchadnezzar's gold statue. Anyone who refuses to obey will immediately be thrown into the blazing furnace.'" Hold on just a second here. Hey, what's the next slide up there? Okay, well, I'm going to go with those slides because what's in here is wrong. So this is going to get really weird. So hang with me because I'm going to have to throw a slide up and then... Actually, no, I'm not. Hold on a second here. We're going to go back here. Talk amongst yourselves. Okay, I'm going to work from a different set of notes because the notes I typically work from are just the scripture passages that pop up on the slide. That's all that's there. But when I review, I have more context and more notes and outlines and stuff like that. So we're going to... Daniel issued the competition. That's good. Sometime later, King had a dream. That's good. Herald shouted out. That's good. Okay, so here we go. You ready? I'm ready. I don't know about you guys. So what happens next centers around the other three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, than it does Daniel. So we're going to fast forward through that for today, and we're going to come back to that part of the story tomorrow. So... Yeah, tomorrow. You guys aren't coming back tomorrow? I will be here tomorrow. Where will all of you be? We'll do it next week. That'll be better, right? It's been a really, really long couple of weeks, just so you guys know. So around this time, King Nebuchadnezzar has another dream. But this time, it's about a tree. And so Daniel, again, is the only one who can interpret the dream. And though it would have been easy for Daniel to interpret the dream, to manipulate the dream, to make Nebuchadnezzar feel better about the dream and all of that. In other words, though it would have been easier for Daniel to lie to Nebuchadnezzar and save his own skin, Daniel reveals that what is going to happen is that Nebuchadnezzar is going to lose his kingdom. The kingdom's going to be taken away from Nebuchadnezzar. And so then a guy by the name of Belshazzar becomes king. And after Belshazzar becomes king, Daniel continues to grow advance in the kingdom. But Belshazzar is throwing this incredible feast. And in the middle of a feast, a hand shows up and starts writing on a wall. Nobody can interpret what's written on the wall except for Daniel. And when Daniel interprets what's written on the wall, he now tells Belshazzar that because of his pride, he's going to lose his kingdom. And so after this, Belshazzar does something that seems really, really unusual and really, really different. It says, then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was dressed in purple robes, a gold chain was hung around his neck, and he was proclaimed third highest ruler in the kingdom. Because Daniel has done the right thing, because Daniel has interpreted the dreams honestly, even though this would be a situation where it would be easier to shoot the messenger, Daniel gets rewarded for doing the right thing. Even though he presents bad news to the king that the king's going to lose his kingdom, the king rewards him and promotes him to the third highest in the kingdom. So the interesting thing is that when Daniel predicts Belshazzar's death, he said it's going to happen that very night. And so before it happens, Belshazzar rewards Daniel. And so that very night, Belshazzar actually dies, and a guy by the name of Darius the Mede becomes the king. And he divides the kingdom into 120 provinces. And Daniel continues as one of the top three officials in the kingdom, even under the next king. Well, this presents some problems for the other administrators and the other officials, and he becomes one of the most trusted advisors. And it says, Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all the other administrators and high officers. Because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. So Daniel's going to be in charge of everything, probably everything except the king himself. As you might imagine, this doesn't sit well with the other people. And there are people that think they're in competition with Daniel for a role in the kingdom. And they become jealous of David. This only happens to people like Daniel. And it only happens to people in Daniel's culture. It never happens to people like me. It never happens to people like you. And it never happens in our day. Right? Says, then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs. But they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn. He was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. So they concluded, our only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel will be in connection with the rules of his religion. They looked everywhere and anywhere for anything that they could use to bring criticism and complaint against Daniel, but they could find nothing. Daniel was known for always doing the right thing, no matter what. And that, his doing the right thing, him staying true to his convictions, him staying true to what he was believed, was the only thing they could find to leverage against Daniel. So they appeal to the pride of the king, and they deceive and they manipulate Darius into issuing a decree that anyone who defied would be thrown into a den of lions. And as a result, a lot of people had to make decisions about what they were going to do. They had to make decisions about whether they were going to obey the decree of the king or they were going to stay true to their belief convictions. And if they stayed true to their belief convictions, they would spare their lives. If they obeyed the king, they would spare their lives. If they strayed true to their convictions, then they would be thrown into a den of lions. For those who opposed Daniel, this move was all about trapping him because they knew. They knew that he would do the right thing, and they knew that he would stay true to his belief convictions. And as things begin to unfold, this would mean disobeying the decree. It says, but when Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home and knelt down, and I love this phrase, as usual, in his upstairs room with its windows open towards Jerusalem. He prayed three times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God. True to his form, Daniel does what is his usual custom to do. He prays to his God. He prays to Jerusalem. Even though the decree of the king said you couldn't do that, Daniel did what he knew was the right thing to do. And true to their form, the people who opposed, the people who manipulated Darius, the people who did that, they show up at Daniel's house. And they show up at Daniel's house because they know that they're going to catch Daniel doing what Daniel's always done. They know what he's going to do. And so they go. And when they find Daniel praying, just as they knew they would do, they go to the king. And they tell the king that Daniel is disobeying the decree. And then they remind Darius. Then they remind Darius of the consequences of the decree. That anybody who disobeys the decree will immediately be thrown in the den of lions. Hearing this, the king was deeply troubled. And he tried to think of a way to save Daniel. He spent the rest of the day looking for a way to get Daniel out of this predicament. The decree, interestingly, says immediately will be thrown. But the king takes the rest of the day. The king is deeply troubled. We're not given details about why the king is deeply troubled, but I think the king is deeply troubled because he knew Daniel did the right thing. And he didn't want Daniel to be punished for doing the right thing. He didn't want Daniel. I think he liked Daniel. I think he cared about Daniel. Daniel was one of his most trusted advisors. Daniel was completely trustworthy. He knew that Daniel would always do the right thing. And he knew that Daniel shouldn't be punished. And I think Darius knew that he had been tricked, that he had been manipulated, and he had been deceived by those other people into issuing this decree. And all of a sudden, I think Darius realized they did it for this purpose. And he wanted to backtrack out of it, but there was no way that he could backtrack out of it. When Darius finds himself backed into the corner, things continue to unfold, and he realizes that there's no way out. He has some parting words for Daniel. And he says to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve so faithfully, rescue you." Darius may not have even believed in the same God that Daniel believed in. The God Daniel believed in may have been one of the gods Darius might have considered, but he didn't faithfully serve that God like Daniel did. But yet, as the story unfolds, Darius has seen something in Daniel. He's seen something in the way that Daniel serves his God so faithfully that leads him to believe that maybe, just maybe, Daniel's God will be able to rescue him. But he knows the decree is in place. He knows there's no other option. And he knows the only way that Daniel will get out of this is through the work of his God. And so he has Daniel thrown into the lion's den. And after Daniel's thrown in and the stone is placed in front of the opening, Darius remains troubled through the entire night. And the next morning, Darius gets up first thing and he makes his way to where Daniel's been thrown into the lion's den. And it says, when he got there, he called out in anguish, "Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God, whom you serve so faithfully, able to rescue you from the lions?" And Daniel answered, "Long live the king. My God sent his angel to shut the lions' mouths so that they would not hurt me. For I have been found innocent in his sight, and I have not wronged you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted in his God. I don't know, but this seems like one of the times where things work out okay for Daniel for having done the right thing. Not so much. It didn't work out so well when he was thrown in the lion's den, but it worked out just fine when he was thrown in the lion's den. Amazingly, Daniel was unharmed, and the king was overjoyed. The king is so overjoyed that he has the people who accused Daniel in the first place thrown into the lion's den. And not just them, but their wives and children as well. And let's just say that things worked out much differently for them when they got thrown in than they did for Daniel. Apparently, the lions were a little hungrier when they got thrown in and a little less hungry after they were thrown in. So, Darius then sends a message to the people. And it says, "Peace and prosperity to you. I decree that everyone throughout my kingdom should tremble with fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he will endure forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed, and his rule will never end." There's an old phrase that some of us have heard. It says, when a door closes, God opens a window. Anybody ever heard that phrase? In this story, when Daniel opened a window, God opened a door. You see, Daniel opened a window to pray to his God. And as a result of that, God opened a door for Darius, and maybe even other people through the result of Darius's decree, to believe in the same God that Daniel had faithfully served. And things turn out pretty well for Daniel. The text tells us that from then on, so it says, so Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus. Now, we haven't even heard about Cyrus. But Cyrus conquered Darius and became king, and Daniel stayed as part of Cyrus. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So Daniel prospered during Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel prospered during Belshazzar. Daniel prospered during Darius, and Daniel prospered during Cyrus. Four very, very different kings. But in each of the reigns, Daniel prospered because he continued to do the right thing. No matter who the king or what the situation, the foundation on which Daniel made his decisions, whether to do the right thing or not, wasn't how it was going to work out in the end, but based on what he believed about God. And what he believed about his relationship with God. There were times when things worked out really well for Daniel. And there were times when things were pretty challenging for Daniel. But through it all, Daniel chose to do the right thing. Daniel knew that doing the right thing was never the wrong thing. Whether it went well, whether it turned challenging, it was never the wrong thing to do the right thing. We all face similar situations, right? And maybe, just maybe for us, maybe doing the right thing is never the wrong thing. Back in April, David went away for his senior class trip. And before he left, we had an interesting conversation about doing the right thing. And remember, if they paid attention growing up, you know, never wrong to do the right thing, never wrong time to do the right thing. They've heard that over and over and over. So when David was getting ready to leave, the conversation that we had, I told him, I said, "Hey," I said, "just go on the trip, have a really good time, but don't do anything stupid." And he looked back at me, and he goes, "Well," he said, I can't guarantee I'm not going to do anything stupid. He said, "but I won't do anything to get in trouble." And I said, "fair enough." Because in that moment, I reflected on my years as a teenager and the amount of stupid things that I did. And so I guess I'll change what I've told my kids, is that even if you do something stupid, it's never the wrong time to do the right thing. Because there is a difference, right? I mean, you can do something stupid and that doesn't make it wrong. You can do something stupid and not get in trouble. So, you know, they got these big, huge skateboards now, the big wide ones and long ones, and those are the things they ride around. Well, when I was younger, we had the skinny, short skateboards, and we used to ride them down driveways on our hands, stacked five high. So I could never guarantee my parents I wouldn't do anything stupid. I just wouldn't do anything to get in trouble. So as we make decisions about what's the right thing to do and what's not the right thing to do, the best filter, the best foundation on which we can do it is based on our faith, based on what we understand about God and the relationship with God, not only that we have, but the relationship with God that we desire. And that was the foundation for Daniel. And as a result, there were times when things went well, and there were times where things were really, really challenging. But Daniel didn't allow circumstances to dictate what decision he made. He allowed his faith to determine those decisions. And I think we would all be well served to do likewise. Let me pray for us, and then we'll close out this morning. Dear God, thank you again for today. Thank you for this time together. Thank you for each and every person that you've gathered here. Thank you for each and every person that's watched online and that will watch online later. Thank you for this incredible story of a guy named Daniel who faced a series of opportunities to make decisions. And thank you for the wisdom that we can discover in Daniel's decisions, that it's never the wrong time to do the right thing, and that doing the right thing is never the wrong thing to do. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so this week, no preview video. We have a guest coming in next week, Richard Fields from Helping Hands in Motion and the House of Blessing is in Haiti is going to be here next week to share with us. And so we don't have a preview video for him coming in, but we're looking forward to having him in for the weekend and sharing with us what's happening with them and in Haiti. And also, if I understand correctly, he has an update on something new happening in India. And so we'll look forward to that time together. So with that, we'll be dismissed for the morning. Anyone that's interested in me greeting them or saying good morning to them, just give me time to get to the back door. And we'll see you tomorrow. Because you'll all be here tomorrow, right?